Bombed Hamid Bey's from 19 lines from the bottom. So it's starting from Vesava Rabbi Meir. So just to give a little bit of background before we get started. So if you remember from yesterday's daf, the Gemara was discussing the status of a mikvah, the status of a person who toveled, whether they have a chazakah, a presumption of being tahor or not. So the Gemara is going to contrast the case of the mikvah to the case of an Erev Tchumen. So the Gemara wants to know, Vesava Rabbi Meir Tchumen de Oraisa. That was the conclusion from the previous part of the Gemara. The Gemara seemed to assume that Rabbi Meir subscribes to this shita, that the concept of tchumen, of not walking beyond the tchum, is a din de oraisa, which again, we've pointed out before, is a big machlokes. So the Gemara says, is that really true that Rabbi Meir holds that the concept, the din of Erev tchumen, is de oraisa? V'hatnan, im ein yachol lahavlio, bizo amar Rabbi Dustai bar Yanai, mishum Rabbi Meir, shamati shemekadrin baharim, v'isal kadaita tchumen de oraisa, mi mekadrin, v'ha'amar Rav Nachman amar Rabba baravua, ein mekadrin lo ba'ari Torah. The problem is the following. The Gemara quotes an opinion of Rabbi Meir, where Rabbi Meir says that a person can be what's called Makadrin Baharim. Makadrin Baharim literally means that you can pierce a hole through a mountain. What does that mean practically? So what that means is that, let's say for example, you're trying to measure your tchum and you want to use a rope. Now often when you're taking a rope from one side to another side, you may have inclines, depressions, all these different, different topographical things that are in between the two places where you are. So often it's not going to be a straight line. You're going to have to account for all the slopes and inclines and everything else that are in between the two spots. But the Gemara has this chiddush that for some reason you're allowed to be makadrin. You can essentially ignore the fact that there are all these slopes and inclines in between the two spots that you're trying to extend the rope, and you can just kind of view it as if it's a straight line. Now the Gemara points out that that concept only makes sense when you're talking about dinim derabanan. When it comes to halachos nida oraisa that require measuring, for example, when it comes to measuring the boundaries of an ear miklat, or when it comes to doing the mitzvah of measuring for an egla arufa, if you find a dead body, right, a murder victim between two cities, and you have to measure which city is closer, so in those cases, the Gemara says, you cannot rely on this concept of makadrin. You can't just ignore the slopes and the inclines and all the stuff in the middle. You have to factor that in to figure out which city is closer. So the fact that Rabbi Meir is saying that I can ignore all the slopes and inclines in the middle when it comes to measuring my tchum, that would imply that he holds that tchum is only derabanan. So how then can Rabbi Meir say that tchum is really deoraisa? So says the Gemara, no, lo kashia, ha di deha derabe, de konami de katani, bizo amar Rabbi Dustai bar Yanai, mishem Rabbi Meir, shamati shemekadrin baharim shmamina. The Gemara says, no, that was Rabbi Meir quoting his rabbeim. In other words, Rabbi Meir himself believes that, he himself believes that tchum is deoraisa, but there were other Rabbeim that he was citing who held that it was only Durabanan. So Rabbi Meir himself would actually disagree with this. He would actually think that you're not allowed to do Makadrin Baharim. You can't ignore all the slopes and inclines and depressions and whatever in the ground. You have to factor that in when it comes to measuring Tchum according to Rabbi Meir. Okay. Then the Gemara points out, Rami Deoraisa Deoraisa Rabbi Meir. We have a further problem, a further contradiction between two Dine Deoraisa within the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Disnan, Naga Be'echad Balayla, Ve'eno Yodea Imchai Meis, Ulamachar Hishkin Rabbi Meir mitahar v'chachamim mitamin shekola tameos kishas mitziyasim. The Gemara, the Mishnah presents the machlokas, the Mishnah Maseches Taharos, the following scenario. Let's say a person goes to sleep at night, and in the middle of the night, there was somebody next to you. You touched the person next to you. Then you wake up the next morning, and the person next to you that you touched is dead. So the question is, are you now tame? What's the issue? So Rabbi Meir says that you're not tame. Why? Because Rabbi Meir says, well, the last thing you knew about this guy is that he was alive. So you can assume that until the moment that you know for a fact that he was dead, which is when you woke up, you can assume that every minute before that, he was still alive. That was his previous chazakah. So when I touched the guy 6 hours ago, I can assume he was probably still alive at that point. However, the Chachamim say no. The Chachamim disagree, and they say that because right now he's dead, you have to assume that at the time that you touched him, he was also dead. So the question is, this is, again, according to Rabbi Meir, this is a potential question of a deoraisa, right? We're talking about tumas mis. We're talking about a person who touches theoretically touches a dead body, in which case the person would become tamei mi deoraisa, and yet Rabbi Meir is being makil here. But again, the problem is that, as we've just pointed out, that in scenarios that are deoraisa, Rabbi Meir, again, whether it comes to tumin, whether it comes to the cases of mikvah that the Gemara spoke about earlier, it sounds like Rabbi Meir should actually be machmir. Why then is Rabbi Meir turning around and being lenient in this case? So says the Gemara, no. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mishnah Seinu, Shehaya Aleha Sheretz Kol Ben Hashmashos. Again, the Gemara was asking a contrast between the case of the person who touches the person who then turns out to be dead the next morning, as opposed to the case of an Erev Tchumen, where, let's say, for example, I was using truma that became tameh, let's say, just as an example. So the Gemara says that the reason why there's no contradiction or there's no issue between the case of the trum, the heir of trumin, and the case of the person who touched the other guy who ended up dead, is because in the case of the trum, the case was with that, you know, where there was a sheret on top of the trum, on top of the truma, for the duration of ben hashmashos. In other words, what that basically means is that we know for a fact that that heir of trumin is going to be tameh. And again, as we pointed out many times earlier in the Masechta, when your heir of trumin, when you can't eat it, right, again, for halachic reasons, so that's going to pose a problem. So that's why over here, when you know that there was a sheretz on top of your truma for the duration of Bein HaShemashos, and again, Bein HaShemashos is the time when the Eruv Tchumen goes into effect. So if it was Tame for the duration of Bein HaShemashos, then it's going to pose a problem. Now again, there's an issue with this. The Gemara says, Ihachi Behal Lema Rabbi Yossi Suffik Eruv Kashir. The Gemara says, hang on one second. If the case that we're dealing with here is where there was a sheret on top of the truma that was acting as my Eruv Tchumen for the duration of Bein HaShemashos, that's not a suffik, that's a vadai, that's for sure not going to be a valid Eruv Tchumen, right? Why is the Gemara presenting this as if it's a suffik, we're not sure, maybe it's a problem? No, if the sheret was on top of the truma for the duration of Bein HaShemashos, then it certainly is not going to be a valid Eruv Tchumen. So says the Gemara, you're right, Rabba v'Rav Yosef d'Amri Travayu, hacha b'shtei kitei edem askinan, achas omeris mi ba'on yom nitma, v'achas omeris mi shechashecha. Comes Rava and says that the case, I'm sorry, comes Rabba and Rav Yosef and say that the case that we're dealing with here is where you have a contradiction between two sets of witnesses. Meaning, one set of witnesses say that the truma became tameh before Shabbos began, and the other set of witnesses say that the truma became tameh after Shabbos began. What's the difference practically? If the truma was tameh before Shabbos began, then you cannot use it as a valid Erev Tchumen. If it only became tameh after Shabbos already started, so since you had a valid Erev Tchumen before as Shabbos was beginning, that's good enough to act as an Erev Tchumen. So that's the issue. That's the case here. The case here, according to Rabba and Rav Yosef, is where you have a contradiction between these two Edim as to when exactly did this Truma become Tumme. That's the first answer. Then the Gemara says, Rava Amar, Hasam Trecheske Lekula, Vahacha Chada Chazaka Lekula. Then Rava gives a different answer. Rava says that there's a very fundamental difference between the case of the person who touched the other guy and the other guy turns up dead, as opposed to the case where I'm using truma that ends up becoming tameh for my eruv, which is the following, that in the first case, so there are two chazakas working in my favor. The first one is the guy who is now dead was alive yesterday. That was his previous chazaka. So until the moment that I know for a fact that he died, I can assume he was alive up until that moment. That's the first thing going in my favor. And the other thing is that I myself was also tahar yesterday. So I have two chazakas working in my favor, that I was tahar and that the guy was alive until the moment that I know that he died. Whereas in the case of the truma, you only have one chazaka working in your favor, namely that the truma used to be tahar. That's it. You don't have any other chazaka working in your favor. So Rava says the reason why there's a distinction to be made between the case of the guy who died and the case of the truma that became tame by Erev Tumen is because truma only has one chazaka, one presumption working in its favor, whereas the case of the guy who died, there are two presumptions working in your favor. Okay. Then the Gemara points out, Kashya de Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara takes a little bit of a turn and points out that we have a further problem, we have a further issue within the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. Because again, this is going back to what the Gemara was discussing earlier, where if you have a suffix, whether the person, let's say, went to the mikvah, so that's going to potentially be problematic for Tuma de Oraisa, but for Tuma de Rabbanan, so Rabbi Yossi seemed to be Mekel. So the Gemara says, so it sounds like that Rabbi Yossi is only going to be Machmir for de Oraisas, and yet when it comes to a suffix by an Erev Tchumen, which is presumably only Mi de Rabbanan, Rabbi Yossi is Machmir. So how do we resolve this apparent contradiction? So says the Gemara, no, Amar Ravuna Bar Chinana, Shaini Tuma Ho V'yeshla Ikar Min HaTorah. Tuma is different than Erev Tchumen because Tuma has its roots in the Torah, meaning, even though in this particular example, you may be dealing with Tuma Mi D'Rabbanan, as the Gemara a little bit earlier explained back on Lamed Hayam and Beis, the Gemara said, even though you may be dealing with the specific scenario of Tuma D'Rabbanan, but because Tuma at its core, at its very essence, is a din de oraisa, Rabbi Yossi is more inclined to be machmir when it comes to Tuma. So the Gemara says, okay, Shabbos nami de oraisa. What about Shabbos? Shabbos is also rooted in the Torah. So why, in other words, so then why would Rabbi Yossi make this distinction? So says the Gemara, no, kasava Rabbi Yossi tchumen de rabbanan, because even though, yes, it's true that Shabbos is fundamentally a din de oraisa, but the concept of tchumen, as we pointed out, again it's subject to a machlokes. We usually assume tchumen is only de rabbanan, and Rabbi Yossi clearly is also assuming that way. Rabbi Yossi is assuming that because the din of Tchumen is Derabanan, we have a little bit more leeway to be makel when it comes to Tchumen, as opposed to when it comes to Tumah. Since the whole notion of Tumah is rooted into Oraisas, even if the particular scenario with which we're dealing happens to be Derabanan, Rabbi Yossi will be Machmir, whereas in the realm of Tchumen, Rabbi Yossi is going to be makel across the board whenever you have a suffix. That's one approach. That's one way to resolve Rabbi Yossi. The Iba is Ema, Hadidei Hadarabe. The Gemara says, Dekanami, Dekatani, Amar Rabbi Yossi, of Tomos Hayan, Mishum Chamisha, Zekanem, Shesafik, Erev Kashash, Ramina. And the other answer is very, very similar to an answer we gave a little bit earlier back on the bottom of Lamed Hamid Beis, which is that maybe this is Rabbi Yossi's own opinion versus the opinion of his Rabbeim. In other words, maybe Rabbi Yossi himself is going to be Machmir in the case of Erev Tchumen, where there's a suffix when it became Tameh, whereas Rabbi Yossi's Rabbeim that he's citing think that in that case it's going to be okay, it's still going to be a valid Erev. Then the Gemara has another approach. Rava Amar, Hasam Hainu Taima de Rabbi Yossi, Hame Tameh Al Cheskaso Ve'ema Lo Tava. Now comes Rava and says, well, maybe the logic behind Rabbi Yossi is as follows. Maybe Rabbi Yossi says that the last thing we know about this truma is that it's tameh, right? So the last thing we know about this person is that he's tameh. Now, if the last thing we know about him that he's tameh, or about the truma that it's tameh, so then we should assume that it never went to the mikvah. If it never went to the mikvah, so then the last thing we know about it is that it's going to be tameh. That should be its chazaka. That should be its presumptive status. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Adarabah, hamid mikvah al cheskasu ve'ema lo chasar. On the other hand, you can argue that if you know the person went to the mikvah, so presumably the mikvah had at least 40 sa'ah, you know the mikvah was a kasher mikvah, so why not say that the truma is tahar, the person is tahar? The Gemara says, no, the Gemara says, b'mikvah shalom nimdad. In other words, maybe you could argue that the case is where nobody measured the mikvah. So if nobody measured the mikvah, if you don't know for a fact that there are really 40 sa'ah inside of this mikvah, so then the mikvah doesn't even have a chazakah. There is no presumptive status by the mikvah, and therefore one could argue that it is still going to pose a problem, and you're going to have to revert back to your original chazakah of the truma being tameh. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tanya, Ketzad Amar Rabbi Yossi Suffik Erev Kasher. The Gemara wants to know, what exactly was the case in which Rabbi Yossi said that if I have a suffik regarding my Erev Truma, I'm not sure if the Truma became Tameh, in which case did Rabbi Yossi say that it's still okay to use it as an Erev Truma? So says the Gemara, Erev Betruma, Suffik Mi Ba'od Yom Nitmes, Suffik Mi Shecha Shecha Nitmes, V'chein Beferos, Suffik Mi Ba'od Yom Niskenu, Suffik Mi Shecha Shecha Niskenu, Zehu Suffik Erev Kasher. Avom, Erev betruma suffik tahora suffik tamea v'chein beferu suffik niskenu suffik lo niskenu ein zeh suffik erev kasher. So says the Gemara. The Gemara makes the following distinction. The Gemara says when it comes to a suffik, in other words, everyone knows that this truma became tamei. Let's say, right? But the suffik is when did it become tamei? Did it become tamei before Shabbos or after Shabbos? Or let's say, for example, instead of truma, let's say I'm using fruit and the fruit originally was tevel, and now I want to figure out when exactly did the hafra. Russia, when did the separation of Trumas and Maestros occur? So again, in other words, if everyone knows that Trumas and Maestros are separated, but we're just unsure if that happened before or after Shabbos, so the Gemara says that is not a scenario of a Suffolk Erev Kasher. That case is a scenario of a Suffolk Erev. What would not be a scenario of a Suffolk, says the Gemara? If, let's say, for example, my truma, right, that was suffik tame, suffik tahar, or I have fruit where I just don't know if trumas and maestros were separated at all. So in other words, if it's a much more all-encompassing suffik, if it's a suffik, I have no idea if the truma is tame or tahar. I have no idea if the fruit is tevel or not. So the Gemara says, that's not a suffik erev. What is a suffik erev is, if I know that it's tame, I just don't know when it became tame. If I know that I did that I took off trumas and maestros, I just don't know when exactly that happened. So the Gemara says, well, so the Gemara wants to know, maishna truma, the Gemara says, well, hang on one second, what's the difference between the case of the truma and the case of the fruit? In other words, in the case of the truma, I should say, well, let's follow the chazaka. What's the chazaka? What's the original status quo of this truma? The assumption is this truma should be tahar. That's the last thing we know about it, right? In other words, the last thing we know about the truma is that it's tahar. Now, you know, 30 minutes into Shabbos, I find out that it's tameh. So the last thing I knew about the truma was that it was tahar. So presumably, I can go back to the original status and say, oh, it's probably still tahor. The case of the fruit, however, is the exact opposite, if you think about it, because the fruit starts out as tevel, and now we want to override that chazakah and make it into truma, and, you know, in other words, into not tevel anymore. So the Gemara says, okay, well, why don't, in other words, go back to the original chazakah and say, well, if it was tevel when Shabbos started, it's probably still tevel right now, right? So in other words, that the case of the fruit should actually go against us, should actually be a problem, should actually undermine the air of Tchumen. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. And the Gemara says, The Gemara says, "Lo tema suffik mi ba'od yom niskenu, ela'ima suffik mi ba'od yom nidme'u suffik mishech hasheicha nidme'u." The Gemara says that, no, we misunderstood the case. The case was never where there was a suffik whether it was tevel, but rather, in other words, this was not a case of tevel fruit. I was using regular fruit. There was already trumas and maasers were taken off of this fruit, you know, I don't know, 5 days ago. Right? This was regular fruit. So what's the issue here? The issue is that the fruit subsequently got mixed in with tevel. That's called dimua. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that the fruit got mixed in. So when Shabbos began, it was regular fruit. And now, half an hour into Shabbos, I find out that it got mixed in with Tevel. So now, if you go back to the original Chazakah, that will tell you that the fruit is probably fine. The fruit is still going to be regular fruit. Again, if the case was where the fruit started out as Tevel, then Enachanami, that's going to be a problem. That's because then the original presumption is that the fruit is in fact going to be a problem to use for the Erev Tchum. Okay.
Then they go, Rabbi, yeah, is there, yeah, a time that I need to go ahead and do my Erev? Can I don't put my Erev up Tuesday for Friday? I mean,
In theory, as long as you put it up for the purpose of Shabbos, it doesn't really matter. As long as it has to be put up before Beinash Mashos, right? And the Erev has to be a valid Erev, at least for the duration of Beinash Mashos. Once Beinash Mashos is over, so then the Erev can blow away, the Erev can whatever, right?
So do you have to know... then that Bein HaShmashos it was valid, or is the assumption
of... So that's part of this issue in the Gemara right here. That's what we're trying to figure out. We're trying to say, well, maybe we can rely on this Chazakah. We can go back to the previous stat, you know, the previous presumption.
That's really my question. How long can you... For what period of time can you rely on Chazakah? If I put it up Tuesday, can I rely on a Chazakah? You know,
usually the way that Chazakos work is that until you have a reason to believe that something has changed, we assume it's the same. Like just as an example, right? Why is it that I don't have to check my tefillin every single day to make sure they're kosher? Because you rely on a chazaka. You assume my tefillin were kosher yesterday, they were kosher 10 years, or they're probably kosher today, right? So meikar adin, you can rely on chazaka for, we rely on chazakas for everything. You rely on chazaka. How do I know that my mezuzahs are still kosher? Because they were kosher yesterday, because they were kosher the day before, right? So the idea of a chazaka is that until I have a reason to believe that something changed, I assume it's still fine. That's the basic assumption. Okay. Yeah. So the truth is that midrabbanan, you're not really allowed to be mafresh trumas and maaseros on Shabbos. Now, again, we actually mentioned this last week, that there's a machlokas about whether you're allowed to do isurei derabbanan during Bein HaShmashos of Shabbos. That's a separate issue. So the answer is maybe. Again, depending on which shita you're going to follow in the Gemara, potentially. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Ba'arav Shmuel Ba'arav Yitzchak Me'arav Huna. Hayulafan of Shteki Karos, Achas Temeya Viachas Tahora, the Amar Ervu Libe Tahora Bechol Makom Shehi Mahu. So the Gemara says, what about the following? I have two loaves of bread in front of me. I want to use one of them for my Erev Tchumen. One of them is Tame, one of them is Tar, but the problem is I have no idea which is which. So I say, let the Tahor bread be my Erev Tchumen, whichever one it is. In other words, you're admitting basically that you don't know which bread is tahar, but you say, you know, whichever the tahar bread is, that should be my erev tchumen. So what's the din? Does that work? So says the Gemara, Tiboyle Rabbi Meir, Tiboyle Rabbi Yossi, Tiboyle Rabbi Meir, Ad Kan Lo Ka'am Rabbi Meir Hasam Dileka Tahora, Hacha Ha'ika Tahora, O Dilma Afilu Rabbi Yossi Lo Ka'am Ha'ela Hasam Im Isa Dihi Tahora Yadala, Aval Hacha Halo Yadala. So the Gemara says, well, you could ask this question both according to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbi Yossi. On the one hand, you could ask according to Rabbi Meir, because at least in this case, you know that one of the loaves is tar, you just don't know which one it is. On the other hand, you can ask according to Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi, at least in the cases of Truma, will say, well, there, if you had something tar, you knew that it was tar definitively. Here, you have no idea which one is tar. So the Gemara says, which of these approaches is correct? Meaning, again, if I want to declare this to be an Erev Tumen by saying, let the tar bread be the Erev without knowing which one that is, that's the issue in the Gemara. Is that going to be a valid Erev Tumen or not? So what's the answer? So Amar Lei Bein Le Rabbi Yosi Bein Le Rabbi Meir Beinan Seuda Haruuyam Ibaod Yom Veleika. The Gemara says, whichever approach you follow, this will not be a valid Erev Tumen. Why not? The Gemara invokes a principle which we're going to come back to a couple of times on this daf again, which is called Asuda Haruuyam Ibaod Yom. One of the requirements of an Erev Tumen is that it needs to be edible before Shabbos begins. Now, when you have two loaves of bread and you know that one is Tame and you don't know which one it is, you can't eat either one because that's a suffik de oraisa, right? So you can't eat either loaf of bread. So because the loaves of bread are not edible, so to speak, from before Shabbos, halachically, therefore they are disqualified from being used as an Erev Tumen. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Be'amine Rava Mirav Nachman. Kikar Zo Hayom Chalu Lamachar Kodesh. Va'amar Ervu Li Bazeh Mahu. What if you have the following case? Let's say I have a loaf of bread and I make a very, very, very strange kind of a declaration over the loaf of bread. I say, today the bread should be regular, normal bread, but tomorrow the bread should be a hektesh. It should have kedusha to it. So the question is, of course, you can't use hektesh bread for your Erev Tumin because you can't get any hana from hektesh, right? So the question is, well, what would the status of such a loaf be for your Erev Tumin? So the Gemara says, Omer, it's a valid Erev. You can use that loaf of bread, the one that you said today, it's a regular loaf, tomorrow it's hektish, that's okay. However, but if you did it the opposite, let's say you said, today the bread should be hektish and tomorrow it should be a regular loaf of bread, that's not going to work for your Erev Tumin. So what's the difference? Maishna. So Rav Nachman almost like in jest said to Rava, when you go out and eat a core of salt, you'll figure it out. In other words, he's basically telling him, like the distinction is obvious. What's the difference between the two cases? Hayom chol lemachar kodesh misvika. Yeah.
Rabbi, I'm sorry. Yeah. How do you go ahead and take something that today is hektish and then you can build in
pretty much any stipulation you want to anything. That's an area of halacha called haflah. Haflah refers to things like nidarim, shvuos, nazirus, hektish, haram. All these things have to do with your formulation of how you verbalize things. So you can pretty much build in anything you want. You could say, I want my animal to belong to the Beis HaMikdash for the next week. I want my car to belong to this for the next day. Like, you can say whatever you want. So anything that you build into anything that you stipulate is going to be binding. So you say, I want the bread to be kodesh today or tomorrow or whatever. And again, anything you say will theoretically be binding. Now the issue becomes, okay, so how do we relate to that in terms of Erev Tumin? That's the issue. That's what we're trying to figure out, right?
Wait, sorry.
That's a separate issue. Okay, that's going to be an issue we're going to talk about later in the week. What happens if I made an Erev Tumin and then somebody ate it before the second day? What if I have a Yontif and a Shabbos and a Yontif? We're going to get into that a little bit later in the week. We're going to talk about that. We'll see.
You change the case, right?
Yeah.
You go ahead and you made it hektish, and you go ahead and you say, okay, and the next day it's not you. You're doing the... Do you have to substitute something for it?
You're asking a general question. You're saying once something becomes hektish, usually if you want to redeem it, you actually have to redeem it. Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good question. It sounds like from this Gemara, again, I haven't looked at the Rishonim here, but it sounds like from this Gemara that in this scenario where you built in a stipulation and you said that it's hektish today but not tomorrow, it almost sounds like you don't really need to do anything to it. It almost sounds like it's just going to happen by itself, right? In other words, it's one thing to say if I donated my car to hektish and then 3 weeks later I decide I want it back, okay, so there you have to pay an extra fifth and you have to pay the principal, etc. Those are all the regular halachos of
pigeons.
What was that?
Bogus. It's not like you said.
Well, no, it's not. It's not necessarily bogus. It's the same. It's the same. It's the equivalent of let's say I lend something to someone, right? So they can use it for a day or for a week or for a month or whatever, right? And then they give it back. Same thing. Maybe I'm leasing. Well, again, that's part of the issue here. That's part of the issue. You didn't just say it was hektish. You said it's hektish, but tomorrow it's not. Now, again, why you don't require pidyon here is a good question. It's very possible that there are rishonim who say that maybe you do require pidyon before you can use this bread. That may be true, but it sounds like from the simple reading of this Gemara that if that's the way that you made your declaration, that it's binding. Right? In other words, you can basically say anything you want, and then that whatever you said will go into effect. That's what the Gemara says. So again, what's the difference between these two cases? Says the Gemara, Hayom chol ulemachar kodesh misfeka lo nachta le kedusha. Hayom kodesh ulemachar chol misfeka lo paka le kedusha. See, again, very basic distinction. In the case where I said the bread is chol today, but tomorrow it's hektish, so you're not going to say that, oh, I'm, you know, that misfeka, that out of a situation of suffix, I'm not gonna grant it kedusha, because today the bread was not kodesh, the bread was chol, so I have no reason to believe that the bread turned into anything other than chol. Whereas in the other case, in the opposite case, where the bread started out as hektish, you need to prove to me that the bread lost the status of hektish. So the onus of proof is on you. The bread starts out as hektish, it's not gonna be as easy to remove the kedusha. Kedusha from it. That's why the Gemara thinks that there's a distinction between these two cases. Okay. Now the Gemara quotes a Mishnah, a Meseches Tevuyom. Tanan Hasam. Lagin Tevuyom Shemalu Menachavish Al Meiser Tevel. The Amar Hareza Trumas Meiser Lecheshetachshach Dvarav Kayamin. The Amar Ervu Libazel Lo Amar Klum. A little bit of a complicated Mishnah here, but we're familiar with the principle of Tevuyom. We've spoken about this back in Meseches Brachos and a few other places, right? This comes up all over the place in Shas. Now the truth is we're used to hearing about the concept of a Tevuyom for a person, right? A Zav goes to the mikvah. A Nida goes to, right? A Zava goes to the mikvah. They have to wait for the sun to set before they can become really tahor. But the truth is that this Mishnah extends that principle to Kalim also. I have a Tamei Kli. I brought the Kli to the mikvah, and now the Mishnah says in Maseches Tevuyom, I have to wait for the sun to set for it to become 100% tahor. The same basic idea. So let's say I have the following case. I have a Kli that I brought to the mikvah today, and by tonight, the Kli is going to be fully tahor. The thing is like this. I want to fill up this flask, this Kli, with produce or with liquid or whatever that I separated Meiser from, but I have not separated Truma. This is like a throwback to last week. Remember last week we had the whole discussion about the grain and the produce, about the guy who took off the Meiser before the Truma, right? So I have a scenario where the Meiser was taken off already, but not Truma. So a person makes the following declaration. They say like this. They say, I'm going to fill up this flask with whatever, and they say, again, that that the contents of this flask should act as a form of Truma after it gets dark, after Tzeis HaKochavim. So, in other words, after Tzeis HaKochavim, the flask will be tahor according to everybody, right? Because it's going to be after Tzeis HaKochavim. So, if I were to declare this to be Truma before Tzeis HaKochavim, it would become Tame, because the Kli is still a Tful Yom. It's going to make the Truma, it's going to make the contents the Truma Tame. But because I made the declaration to say that after Tzeis HaKochavim, it should be act as Truma, that's a binding declaration. However, the Gemara says that if I wanted to use this as my ear of Truma, let's say I filled up my flask and I said that this should be Truma after Tzeis HaKochavim, and it should also go into effect as a valid Erev Truman. So then the Mishnah says that's not going to work. That's not a valid Erev Truman. So the Gemara says, what do you see from this Mishnah? Amar Rava, Zoso Meres, Sofa Yom Kona Erev. The Isal Gadaitach Trilas Yom Kona Erev, I Amar Ervu Libaza Amailo Amar Klum. The Gemara says, what do you see from this Mishnah in Tevul Yom? You see that Sofa Yom Kona Erev, this is a big machlokas in general, at what point in the day does the Erev Truman go into effect? Does it go into effect the last second of Friday or the first second of Shabbos? What's the difference practically? So this case could be a difference. Why? Because if you think that the Erev Truman goes into effect at the end of the day on Friday, so then it makes a lot of sense why the Gemara says that this whole stipulation of I'm taking off Truma, but it's only going to go into effect after Tzeis HaKochavim, that's not going to help you for Erev Truman. Why? Because if the Erev Truman, if you think Erev Truman goes into effect when it's still Friday, so then on Friday before Tzeis HaKochavim, that Truma is still Tameh and you can't use it for an Erev Truman. However, if you believe that an Erev Truman goes into effect at the first second of Shabbos, so then the Gemara says, then presumably this Erev Truman should be effective. It should work because the two events are happening simultaneously. Namely, the Kli is fully Tahar, my Truma is fully Tahar now, and my Erev Truman is going into effect. So the Gemara says, don't you see from here that, in other words, Rava says, don't you see from this Mishnah that we must hold that really Sofayom Kona Erev, that the Erev Truman goes into effect at the end of the day on Friday, as opposed to the beginning of the day of Shabbos? Says more, no, it's not true. Amar of Papa, Athilu Tema Trilas Hayom Kona Erev, Be'inan Su'uda Haruya Mibo Yom Veleg. The Gemara gives the same answer he gave before. The Gemara says, no, it's not necessarily true. You can argue that maybe the Erev Truman goes into effect on Friday, I'm sorry, the beginning of Shabbos. The reason why it's not a valid Erev Truman here is because, again, you're lacking that component of what we said before, a Su'uda Haruya Mibo Yom, since you're not allowed to eat the Truma when it's still daytime, because, again, the Kli only becomes fully tar at night after Shabbos begins, after Tzeis HaKochavim. So even if you were to argue that the Erev Truman goes into effect at the first minute of Shabbos, it's still not going to be a good Erev Truman because, again, it wasn't fit for eating from beforehand. Okay. The Mishnah now says, Masne Adam al Eruvo Veomer, Imbau Nachrim min Hamizrach Eruvi Lamarav, min Hamarav Eruvi Lamizrach, Imbau Lechan Ulechan Lamakom She'erza Eilech, Lo Bau Lo Lechan Velo Lechan, Hareni Kivne Iri. So the Mishnah presents a case as follows. Let's say that you hear a room rumor that there are non-Jews who are going to come and attack the city on Shabbos. So again, it's obviously not real pikuach nefesh. If it was, then obviously all these halachas would be out the window. Let's say they're going to come in, I don't know, they're going to ransack the city. They're not going to kill anyone, they're just going to take all your stuff. So you want to run away from them. So the Mishnah says you have to set up your Erev Tchumen in such a way where you basically stipulate, okay, if they're going to come from the east, my Erev Tchumen will be in the west. If they're going to come from the west, it'll be in the east. If they're going to come from both directions, so then I'm going to have mine go in both directions. And if they end up not coming at all, so the Mishnah says, then Harini Kibnei Iri, I'll just be like a regular member of the city, and I'll be able to walk 2,000 amos in any direction. Then the Mishnah says, in Bach Chacham in HaMizrach, Eruvi LaMizrach, Min Amarav, Eruvi LaMarav, Ba Lechan, Ulechan, Lamakrom, She'er Tse'ilech, Lo Lechan, Velo Lechan, Harini Kibnei Iri. And the Mishnah has almost an identical type of scenario, but almost in the opposite, regarding a Talmud Chacham. Let's say a Rav, a very important Rav is coming to a town, and you want to go here or here. So you say, if he comes from the east, my Erev Tchumen will be to the east. If he comes from the west, it'll be to the west. If you don't know where he's coming, it'll be in both directions, etc. Okay, then the Mishnah continues. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Huda Omer, Im haya echad mehen rabo, holeich eitzel rabo, vim haya shnei rabo, sam lemakom sheyir tzayilich. Rabbi Huda has a slight nuance, a slight caveat here. He says, let's say there are two Rabbanim coming to the city. If one of those two Rabbanim happens to be your personal Rebbe, so then you have to assume that that's the person you're going to go here and not the other guy. Whereas if they're both of equal stature, they're both your Rabbeim, let's say, then you could just make your ear of Tchumen in whichever direction you want. So says the Gemara, So Rabbi Yitzchak, when he presented this Mishnah, taught everything in the opposite. Meaning, in the case of the non-Jews, he said you're going to run towards the non-Jews. In the case of the rabbis, he said you're going to run away from the rabbis. So the question is, that seems to be an outright contradiction to our Mishnah. How does Rabbi Yitzchak justify that? So the Gemara says no. So the Gemara says Nachrim Anachrim Lo Kashia Habifar Hagbana Habimari Demasa Chacham Achacham Lo Kashia Habimosta Pir. Again, the Gemara gives very basic distinctions. When it comes to the non-Jews, there are different kinds of non-Jews. So if it's the tax collectors who are coming your way, you're going to run away from them. If it's the head of the city, the governor, you want to talk to him about some personal matter, then you're going to run towards him. And similar when it comes to the rabbi. If it's a prestigious Rav, you want to go hear his shir, you're going to go towards him. If it's some school teacher who just teaches kids how to say Shema, so most people are a little bit beyond that, so they're not going to go towards that Rav. Again, it just really depends on the situation. Fine. Then the Mishnah says, Rabbi Huda Omer M'haya Echemen. Rabbi Huda had this caveat that if one of them is your personal rabbi, so then you have to assume that's the direction you're going to go in, and your Erev Tchumen will not be valid in the other direction. So the question is, how would the Rabbanan respond to that? V'Rabbanan Zimnin D'Neichalei B'Chavri Tzimei Rabbi. The Gemara says sometimes a person wants to go talk to his colleague more than his Rebbe. So, again, it's not always a given that just because it's your Rebbe coming from one direction, that you're automatically going to go towards that direction. Okay. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Lisa Limas Our Mishnah is incorrect. Our Mishnah is rejected based on the following statement of Ayo. Ayo was the name of an Amora. The Sane Ayo, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino the Masna al Shnei Dvarim Keachad, Ela Imba Chacham LeMizrach Eruvo LeMizrach, The Imba Chacham LeMarav Eruvo LeMarav, Aval Lechan Ulechan Lo. Comes Ayo and explains based on Rabbi Yehuda the following. So again, a person can make a stipulation to say, if the rabbi comes from the east, I'll go to the east. If he comes from the west, I'll go to the west. But what he cannot do is to say that if there are two rabbis from both directions, you cannot say I'm going to make my Erev in both directions. The question is, what's the difference? The Gemara says, "Maishna lechan lechan delo dein brera lemizrach umarav nami ein brera." The Gemara starts a very long and somewhat complicated topic known as brera. Brera is a topic that appears multiple places throughout Shas. The word brera literally basically means something like retroactive clarification. Just for simplicity's sake, what that basically means is that at the time that something goes into effect, let's say which direction my Erev Tchumen is going to be set up in, I don't know all the facts of the case. In other words, I don't really know which direction the rabbi is going to come from when I make my Erev Tchumen. So I'm kind of like, playing the table here. I'm trying to figure out if it's coming from the east, from the west, from both directions. You don't really know. So the Gemara says, well, hang on one second. Why is it that if it turns out that the rabbi comes from the east, then I can put it to the east? If it comes from the west, I can put it to the west. But if it turns out that two of them come from different directions, I can't just say, oh, I'm going to go in both directions. What's the difference? In other words, if you deny the principle of Brera, if you say that the fact that I don't have knowledge of which direction the rabbi is coming in is a problem that will undermine the validity of my Erev Tchumen, again, that's assuming that you deny the principle of Brera, which the Gemara seems to be assuming that Ayo and Rabbi Huda is denying. So the question is, what's the difference between all these cases? It seems to be an arbitrary distinction. In other words, I would say that the Erev Truman is invalid in all of these cases, right? It shouldn't work in any case, right? In other words, if I put my Erev Truman to the east, and the rabbi comes from the east, that also shouldn't work. Why? Because I didn't know he was coming from the east when Shabbos began. And if you invoke this principle called Ein Breira, if you deny Breira, if you say that we cannot rely on clarity happening retroactively, the fact that I didn't know which direction he was coming from when Shabbos began, according to this, should be a problem in all cases. So how does the Gemara have the right to arbitrarily distinguish? So says the Gemara, no. I'm a Rabbi Yochanan, Ukvar Bachacham. Says, no, the case is where the rabbi came already. The rabbi's already in town. You happen to personally not know which direction he came from. So in that case, that's not a Breira issue. Breira means that there was, complete lack of knowledge in Shabbos. Nobody knew where the rabbi was coming from, and you took a gamble and tried to figure out which direction he was coming from. But here, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the rabbi's here already. You just had no idea which direction he was coming from. So in this case, it's not really a Breira issue. Everyone would agree that the Erev Truman would be valid. So now the Gemara says, hang on one second. Adarabba, leso ledaayu mimas nisen. But the Gemara says, well, why don't we say, in other words, beforehand, the Gemara was so convinced that this formulation that Ayo was quoting in the name of Rabbi Yehuda seems to reject our Mishnah, but if anything, I would have said, usually a Mishnah is typically more authoritative than a Braisa. So why are we running to this formulation of Ayo? If anything, I would say the Mishnah's formulation, the fact that the Mishnah invokes the principle of Breira would seem to be a refutation against Ayo's formulation of Rabbi Yehuda, and if anything, I would typically rely on the Mishnah more than on Ayo's version of the Braisa. So why don't we say that? So says the Gemara, no, lo salka daitach, to hashamina leila Rabbi Yehuda delay slebra, because we already found precedent from other Mishnayos and Shas that Rabbi Yehuda himself denies the principle of Breira. How do we know that? It's a very famous and also slightly complicated Mishnah. Disnan, halokeach yayin mibein hakusim, Omer Shnei Lugin Shani Asad Lahafresh Harehin Truma Asara Meiser Rishon Tisha Meiser Sheni Umecha Vishosa Miad Divir Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Shimon Osrin. The Mishnah presents the following. Let's say a person purchases some wine from the Kusim. Now again, this is the Mishnayos and Maseches Avodah Zarah point out that Chazal made a gezera that you can no longer drink wine that comes from the Kusim. This was before this gezera was instituted. So you're buying wine from the Kusim, and the Mishnah says you want to make these declarations to separate Truma and Meiser Sheni. So let's say, for example, you say the case was that you bought 100 lug, right? So we know that for Truma, right, the amount you're supposed to separate for Truma is between a 40th and a 60th. So the average is going to be a 50th, right? So a person says, I'm going to separate 2 lug for truma. That's 2 out of 100. So that's a 50th of the lugin. Then you say, I'm going to separate 10 lug for Meiser Rishon and 9 lug for Meiser Sheni, because the 9 lug is 10% of what's remaining of the 90. So I'm going to separate, 10 Meiser Rishon, 9 Meiser Sheni, etc. So then the Mishnah says that according to Reb Meir, it's totally fine. That's a valid form of redemption. I've redeemed my truma, my Meiser Sheni, and I can drink the wine right away. The only thing is that you have to make sure that at the end, when you finish drinking your wine, whatever is left, you have to make sure you have enough left over to give for Truma, Meiser Sheni, right? So clearly, Rabbi Meir is subscribing to the principle of Breira, because you have no idea when you start drinking the wine which Lugin you're going to end up using at the end for Truma, Meiser Sheni. However, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon all disagree. They all say that that's usher, that you're not allowed to drink the wine in that case, presumably because Rabbi Yehuda denies the principle of Breira. So again, remember, the Gemara was trying to prove that Ayo's formulation in the Braisa of Rabbi Yehuda was more authoritative than our Mishnah, and this seems to be a good proof to that, because this Mishnah that the Gemara is quoting, right, this Mishnah appears in a number of places, this seems to support the notion that Rabbi Yehuda denies Breira, because if he didn't, he should agree with Rabbi Meir, and he should allow you to make this declaration and say the Lugan I'm going to separate in the future should be valid. The fact that he says you can't do that would seem to imply that he denies Breira. So says Gemara, no, it's not necessary.
Is it important in this example that he bought it from Kuti as opposed to when it's red?
It's not necessarily important. It's just that the assumption is that Kustim typically are not going to separate Trumos and Maestros. So in theory, if you bought it from a Jew who you knew didn't separate Trumos and Maestros, you'd have the same issue. It's just, that was like the normal case. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Ula Amar, Leisa La'ayim Mestis. And Ula tries to defend our Mishnah. Ula says, no, really, our Mishnah is in fact more authoritative, and Ayo's formulation of Rabbi Yehuda is incorrect. So how does he explain that? So says Ula, so he says like this, he says, "Ve'eloha dekatani, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Osran, Ula zuze zuze katane, Deva Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Osran." Basically, what Ula did was he basically parsed the Mishnah differently. He basically put the Tanaim in pairs. In other words, the way that we read the Mishnah was that, you know, Deva Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that Breira works in the case of the wine, but Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Shimon disagree. Ula put the comma after Rabbi Huda. He said, "Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Huda say it works, but Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon disagree." So again, it's obviously there's no punctuation in the Mishnah or the Gemara, so you could theoretically read it however you want. So Ula basically paired up the Tanaim. So if you say that, so then it actually makes a lot of sense, and Rabbi Huda will in fact subscribe to the principle of Breira, and that's why our Mishnah, if Ula is correct, our Mishnah would in fact be more authoritative than Ayo, and that's why Ula says that our Mishnah is in fact more correct, and that's why he ends up rejecting Ayo's formulation of the Breisa.